The following program may contain material that is unsuitable for some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Aftermath Radio should not be considered a substitute for services provided by a licensed mental health professional. Good afternoon and welcome to Aftermath Radio, brought to you live from the K-Beach radio station at Cal State Long Beach.
That was sweet.
Love it.
Oh, welcome. Cold heart slap. Welcome into Aftermath Radio.
You know Brian's at the board, right?
I expect better from you, Brian Frederick, by the way. You're the professional.
Yes, I am. But
now, Gigi, would you have done that, what he did?
Maybe.
Gigi Bar.
Maybe.
All right, let me see if I can rescue this little train wreck here. So, Aftermath Radio, Dr. Robert Shugg, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at California State University, Long Beach. Welcome to Aftermath Radio, where we talk about all things psychopathic. And we are, all three of us, just got back from the conference at American Society of Criminology in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. And you're both looking well. Considering what you've been through the past 4 days.
Kind of grueling at times. Grueling at times, yeah.
The weather was interesting, huh?
The last couple of days were gorgeous.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, it was like cold when I left, but the rain had cleared up.
Yeah.
Anyway, so lots to do today. If you'd like, hey, Gigi, go ahead and do your thing, right?
Yes,
earn your money.
Since I can. Okay, all right. If you want to reach us, please call us at 562-912-3541. You can Skype us at aftermath.radio, email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com, or always feel free to check out our website at aftermathradio.org.
Why? What's at that website? Like, why would I even want to check it out?
Because there's links to our podcasts.
Every one of them?
Yes.
Even like today's podcast?
Gosh, how many are there, Rob?
You know what? Seriously, there's probably dozens,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Because we've been doing this a long time. Mm. Yeah. And I actually got an email from a listener who kind of summarized a few of them. It was a really cool email.
That's nice.
Yeah. So maybe we should all go on the website and look at all the great work we've done.
Like a year and a half. Yeah.
Reaching out to folks. Okay, so I wanted to talk about a few things today. Now, we did our live remote.
Yeah.
From the Museum of Crime and Punishment. Did you want to get into that, or did you want to...
Do we want to plug our illustrious chair, Dr. Fredella?
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Hank Fredella, actually, the reason we were at the Museum of Crime and Punishment was that his editor for... Do you remember the name of the book?
Oxford University Press, and it was an intro to criminal justice text.
Put on quite a... what would you call it? I'd say they put out quite a spread. The food was good, right? But sort of a book release party for...
Yeah, you know,
academics.
Dr. Jill Rosenbaum and I actually ran through the exhibit, didn't look at anything, and went right for the food.
Mm. So you didn't see all the medieval torture devices?
She wasn't interested, and I was. She's going to give me a recommendation at Temple, so I'm.
You kind of got to just run. Now, this is interesting etiquette. When someone's going to write you a letter, do you run sort of right next to her, or do you kind of let her lead a little bit, or
I let Dr. Rosenbaum lead. Yes. Yes. She, ouch.
Wow. You need a helmet today, don't you? You all right?
I had one of those crash test dummies today. That was my head hitting
Workman's
the
comp. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's great.
It was nice.
The party was for him. Yeah, my understanding is typically book companies don't do that. So even Hank seemed very surprised.
Yeah.
Right. Good. Okay. So while we were at this National Museum of Crime and Punishment, we did our first live remote at the Ted Bundy Volkswagen Beetle, right?
Yes.
And let's just play the clip, and then we'll kind of describe what happened.
Okay.
And the comedy and the hilarity will ensue, right?
All right.
Go.
Yeah? Okay. So Aftermath Radio crew here at the National Museum of Crime and Punishment. We are in front of the Ted Bundy Volkswagen Beetle, and this is the most disorganized live broadcast we've ever done.
Maybe.
There's no one here to really ask about psychopaths, and I know the three of you
we already know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We could ask the coat check person over there.
Maybe.
Behind us.
Maybe, maybe not.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Oh. Do you work here?
Do you work here? Okay, great.
Check this out. We do an internet radio program about psychopaths called Aftermath Radio in Cal State Long Beach. Mm-hmm. And we're here with the Fredella Oxford University Press book thing. And this is the Ted Bundy Beetle. And he's like the quintessential psychopath.
Yes.
What do you know about psychopaths? Like,
not a whole lot.
Really?
What do you know about Ted Bundy?
Pretty much what we have here in the museum.
Uh-huh.
Very bad guy. If you look into the car there, understatement of the year.
Uh-huh.
If you look into the car, you'll see that the passenger seat has been removed. He actually did that so that he could hide his victims when he was abducting them.
Wow.
So that's pretty interesting yet macabre, you know.
do you get a lot of folks that are interested in this exhibit?
Yes, a lot of people that come in, especially because it's in our lobby, so you can come in and see it.
Right. How did this museum acquire that car?
I was not involved in that process, so I couldn't tell you... you know, the details.
But it's been here as long as you've been here?
No, it's been here only for about, I want to say, a year or two. We used to have John Dillinger's car here, actually, which is on display. Yes, very pretty.
Okay.
Very pretty. Which is actually on display in the Richmond Convention Center right now.
Okay, and do you know any psychopaths?
I don't.
Okay.
Thankfully.
Do you want to meet one?
Not really.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Wow. Well, there you go. A couple of things happened. I just listening back to that now, I didn't quite understand. So Chantel seemed really surprised when she did she run, like physically run into her.
Chantel took charge.
Yeah,
is that
she
what
did.
Was happening?
She did. Yeah. I think she was trying to get the attention of the coat check lady.
Oh, and then
this
an employee
woman was walking by. And
so so just to set it up, you walk into the National Museum of Crime and Punishment in Washington D.C., and in the lobby there is literally like just steps away from where you would pay the admission fee is this beige Volkswagen Beetle, and it's roped off and it's got this sort of text and I think a couple of pictures of Ted Bundy behind it. But it's just like right there and the passenger side door is open and you can look inside to see where the front seat had been removed. Excuse me. And I guess that's where where he would stuff the victims down so they couldn't be seen. But anyway, so we had this idea, I totally accept responsibility for poor planning, that we would go there and there'd be like masses of people there surrounding Bundy's VW and just sort of wanting to talk about Ted Bundy and the car. Well, it turns out we all get there for this thing, and it was after hours. The museum had closed.
And it was closed for the private party.
Right. And so we're kind of in a dilemma, like, well, do we ask our colleagues questions about psychopathy? And we're just like, well, no, that doesn't sound very like good radio, right? So here we are in this empty lobby, the four of us.
Hey, we asked a perfect person, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was either the coat check lady or the employee that just happened to walk by. She was really nice and very, What was your guys' vibe on the car? What'd you think about that?
You know what? Until she pointed out the fact that the passenger seat was missing, it didn't hit me, right? It was just another car. I mean, it's like looking at Hitler's car. You know, I mean, it was like, this is a car that Hitler drove around in, right?
Right.
I did notice some red on the Beetle, and I don't know if they added that. It looked like blood, but I'm sure it wasn't.
On the interior?
No, the exterior.
Oh, okay.
The exterior, yeah. But I kind of got, it was creepy.
Yeah, it was definitely creepy, and I didn't notice the missing seat either until she said something.
You know what struck me about it, actually, was just how incredibly normal it looked. Like, anybody could have drove that car, right?
And my mom had a Beetle like that.
Did she?
When we were kids, yeah.
Yeah. It just makes perfect sense that a psychopathic serial killer would use that as kind of a getaway vehicle. Yeah. And I don't know all the details of that case. And I kind of want to do a show on Ted Bundy, or at least talk about him to some degree. I'd like to maybe interview someone who has spoken with him, because I understand a few folks have. Actually, Dr. Jill Rigge she knows a lot about him.
Really?
Because he ended up in Florida, where he was finally arrested. So she knows quite a bit about him. But
Because we did, in the first season, I think, we did it wasn't just so much Ted Bundy. It was, I think, a collage of different people. But we did, because I know I had some recordings from his interviews.
I remember that, And I know he's sort of thought of as the prototypical psychopath, although I was reading today in another book, it was kind of half toying with the idea of maybe doing a segment on him today. But then that kind of fell through. Just got a little lazy. but according to this book, they said he's not. He's actually quite unique and had some of the psychopathic features that we normally attribute to a psychopath he did not have. So I want to explore that, I think, in a future show. But it was, I mean, I thought it was a pretty good first live remote.
I totally agree.
We could have set it up. We could have posted where in the time and the place, but then you made a comment last week, actually. You said, well, there's lots of psychopaths in Washington. And then I made the joke about the politicians, which was very funny.
And you know, I noticed, this is something that, can I just tell you what my observation of D.C. was?
Absolutely.
That there's a lot of people there pretending to be someone they're not.
Mm.
Okay? So they go there and they're lobbying for something that they may not agree with.
Right.
They're engaging in behavior, i.e., you know, brothels or whatever they're doing, but they're portraying themselves as upstanding, you know, patriotic citizens. When
right.
My grandfather used to tell me, never trust someone who doesn't have a visible vice.
They don't smoke. That's good advice.
They don't swear.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do something. And there were a lot of those people walking around. It's like fembots and mailbots, just like
right.
everywhere.
That's a really good 70s reference, by the way. The fembots.
Yeah, it scared the hell out of me when I was a kid.
Uh-huh. From The Bionic Woman.
Yes.
Remember that show?
Yeah.
Look that up, G.
She
good
knocked
show.
Their face off.
It was just like those eyeballs. Remember that? Oh, scary. Look, you got scared just thinking about it right now.
Yeah.
But that sounds a lot like L.A., though, doesn't it? A little bit, the fake and phony?
Well, you know what? Hollywood and D.C. have a lot of similarities. People are like greasing people up for money and trying to get their projects or their, you know, their stuff.
It's a lot of overlap. Yeah. Now, I keep telling you, and I keep broadcasting this. I hope no one steals this idea, but if anyone wants to work with me on this, yeah, I want to be the first psychopathy researcher to study politicians. I think that
I
can make a career
in
out
our,
of that.
In our first crim class, I still remember that because it hit me.
Like Paul Babiak is the guy you go to now when you study corporate psychopathy, right?
Remember
like,
we had talked about doing a content analysis of Is this proprietary? Should I? Not
I don't know.
Say
let's stop
this?
There. Yeah.
Let's stop this. Yeah. Because what? Because
so, we're still going to do that. I think at some point when we get the time,
I'll come back and help you. Absolutely.
Yeah. Because I just think the amount of, and this is anecdotal, and this is based on what I see in the media and whatnot. But psychopathic traits, I think, run rampant through our political system. I don't even know if anyone would agree to be in a study like that.
That's why we had said you'd have to find a different.
Yeah, because what politician would volunteer all of their personal information knowing that it might come out someday? Yep, just wouldn't happen. Yeah.
After the fact, perhaps, for some, like, you know, fame and fortune again.
Yeah, I guess if you're sort of done with your career, you wouldn't mind.
Like the texting guy, the sexting guy?
Yeah.
What was his name? Yeah.
Yeah.
He might submit to something like that.
Yeah, but he'd probably score pretty high.
But
yeah.
not who is that guy? Kane? Not Kane. Is it Kane?
Herman Cain?
Yeah.
Yeah, no one running for an office would ever want to be.
No.
Yeah. Or even in an office. You know what I mean? It would have to be ex-politicians who are sort of done with politics. And of course, it would be confidential, but the worry of having their information disclosed, I think, needs to be gone. Anyway, I will make my mark with that study. You watch Aftermath Radio listeners.
I knew him when.
You knew me when. That's right. If this whole radio thing doesn't pan out, that's going to be my. That's going to be my meal ticket. Okay, so what I want to do then is continue with our ASC wrap-up, the American Society of Criminology meeting that the four of us attended. Actually, Gigi moved on to New York from where we went. Chant, no, she didn't.
Chant did.
Oh, Chant. I'm sorry.
Because
yeah, I was looking right at you when I said.
This was not going to happen.
Yeah. A lot of folks have a lot going on this week. So,
yeah.
I wanted to actually talk about when we come back after the break, some of the talks about psychopathy. And actually, I believe I was involved with most of them in some way. There wasn't a lot. I mean, a criminology conference, you know, folks that are sort of coming from the biopsych perspective like I am, we're rather rare. I thought I'd talk about that. And then we have, I think, a voicemail we're going to listen to, too. So a bunch of stuff to do. Stay tuned to Aftermath Radio. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
Aftermath Radio.
Aftermath Radio.
Aftermath Radio. Dr. Robert Shug, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State. Aftermath Radio, where we discuss all things psychopathic. I'm going to go out on a limb here. Am I allowed to say that the woman's voice in the commercial that you just played makes me want to gouge my own eyes out with an ice pick? Can I say that?
Beep. No, you can't
just
do that.
Did.
And by the way, if you're later listening to this, so a lot of people are listening to this live, I guess, but if you're listening to this podcast later on, what happens is K-Beach Studio plays commercials in the actual commercial breaks, and for the podcast, we edit them out and put our own stuff in there. So actual commercial content goes through and we're live over there. And that one just...
Hold on.
Oh, you're going to play it again?
Did your morning run or bike ride get rained out again?
That's her.
Where's the ice pick? I'm grabbing for it right now. A pen or something.
Yeah, here's one right here.
Anyway, I'm sure she's a very nice person.
Oh. Things like that just make me sad.
She just needs a job where she doesn't have to talk. That's all. Did I just say that out loud? That's mean. Okay, anyway.
So now the staff out there is like laughing at us, so we should move on.
Anyway.
Gingerly.
If you'd like to speak with us, you can reach us at area code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio. Email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. Check out our website with our podcast at aftermathradio.org. So, continuing our American Society of Criminology wrap-up, the four of us were at the conference in Washington, D.C. over the past 4 days. we talked about our sort of live event at the Museum of Crime and Punishment. At these conferences, just for folks who aren't familiar, and we understand a lot of folks are, they're research conferences, so a lot of researchers from all over the world come, and they present their research, and they're usually in the form of talks that last about 15 minutes. And you're in a room full of, you know, anywhere from 20, 50, maybe 100, depending on how interesting your talk is.
10.
10 for yours?
Yes.
That's not bad, actually.
Yeah, well...
Were you kind of disappointed? I mean,
and Dr. Perrone was one of them.
Oh, not counting yourself though, too, right?
And me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard because you put a lot of work into these things, and you fly all the way over there, and you want a big crowd of people. You want it to be like a rock concert.
Right. Can I tell you what happened with the second one that I went to?
Yes, Gigi, please.
There was four people, three presenters, and the chair was not there.
Oh, that sounds like.
I was the chair actually.
Oh, were you? You were sobbing because only 10 people came to your talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there was no chair, and then they didn't have the hookup for a Mac, and it was just...
It's pandemonium, sounds like. Wow. Okay. Anyway, yes, I mean, they vary in quality in terms of technical problems or content or whatnot. But anyways, related to psychopaths, now the criminology conferences tend not to have presentations on psychopaths. And actually, there is an organization called SSSP, which is the Society for the Scientific Study of Psychopathy, that is primarily focused on psychopaths. Anyway, I was chair of a panel of three talks on psychopathy.
Awesome job.
Thank you. And you're not just saying that because I'm in the room.
Nope.
How many people would you say was in that room?
I would say at least 20. It seemed like it was.
And for a Friday, late Friday, I think that was pretty good turnout.
Yeah, I was surprised too.
My PhD supervisor, Adrian Rain, actually stepped in to give a talk for my former colleague, Yu Gao, who's at the Boston College of the City of University in New York in, the Brooklyn College of the City of University of New York. She was out attending some other things. And he did a talk on, it was called Mismatch of Bodily Sensations and Autonomic Reactivity in Psychopaths. And it was really cool. And I really want to go into the details and explain it. But now I'm thinking I'd rather have either Adrian come on or maybe my friend Yu Gao come on and actually talk about it themselves. But it relates to the mind-body disconnect in psychopaths. And how we can actually measure this physiologically. We can, we can measure heart rate and skin conductance. You know, the amount of sweat that rises and falls in our sweat glands while somebody is doing something stressful, right? And while they're doing this, they're being measured, but they're also reporting on how they feel. And without giving too much detail away, what this study found was that psychopaths were not able to report correctly their emotions during the stressful task, meaning that they reported they felt a certain way, but the physiological indicators suggested it was something different. So
that component is new then.
Yes.
Them reporting on it.
Right.
Right. Okay.
So ultimately, you know, the implication would be, we always talk about psychopaths and their inner experience of emotion and how they don't experience emotion. At least this suggests that what they report experiencing does not match with what their bodies say they're experiencing.
And do you think that's because they're being deceptive?
I don't know. We talked about that actually. Didn't we talk about that in the discussion, G? Do you remember we were talking about perhaps lying or am I just making that up?
No. There were a few people who actually brought that up. If they are how can we rely on them in a sense that they're telling the truth, but we know that they lie, that kind of thing?
Right.
So,
I think the idea is, I mean, that's a good question, Brian, but the idea is maybe not, you know, maybe this like legit, and you know, there's no really motivation for them to lie, you know,
right.
There's no secondary gain. So it was a really interesting talk. I was glad to be there for that and to introduce that. Let's see, what else do I have here? This one was really cool. One thing that a couple other presenters started talking about was this thing called 2D-4D ratio, 2D-4D ratio. If you hold up your hand, everybody hold up your hand right now. Let's all hold up our left hands because that's what I'm looking at a picture of right now. So hold up your left hand with your thumb to the outside. 2D is your pointer finger, right? Your 2D, I think, stands for second digit is the thing. Mm-hmm. And then 4D is your fourth finger or your ring finger, right? Mm-hmm. And if you measure the ratio, the length of your pointer finger to the length of your ring finger, that's in biological terms, that's called this 2D-4D ratio. And it supposedly is an indicator of how much testosterone you were exposed to in the womb. So prenatal testosterone exposure. Huh. If your pointer finger is shorter than your ring finger, and I know everyone's looking at this right now, yeah. Right? Or the shorter it is compared to your ring finger, the higher the ratio. Oh, wait a bit. The lower the ratio, thus the higher the testosterone exposure in utero. Mm-hmm. Okay? So now what this study ended up showing was actually linking it to psychopathic personality in adults. And that, you know, with the idea being that maybe too much testosterone in utero might sort of predispose to later psychopathic traits in adulthood. And again, I want to get the actual... I'd like to get the authors of this study on the show, so I'm not going to say too much more about that. But, just as a bit of practical advice, I think that anyone significant in your life, you should go measure their fingers right now.
I will say that was interesting. I never heard that before, yeah. And it was just kind of cool to hear something like that. And then
right.
Somebody brought up a point about, you know, left-handedness and right-handedness.
Right.
So, I don't know. There's so much you can do with that.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So
Brian has a gleam in his eye right now. I don't know if I want to go where.
Devil's advocate.
Okay, great.
This kind of physiognomy, it's this kind of like, what's our Lombroso?
Right.
Lombrosian kind of, you know, let's look at them and tell if they're psychopathic,
right.
Concerns me.
Right. Well, I started off saying that we did not want to be, or was that the... No, it was this one. We didn't want to be the new physiognomists, or
right.
Did I say that in my other panel? So these really, I mean, I think it's a more sophisticated view of that, and we're not saying that just because if your ring finger is longer than your pointer finger, you're going to be a psychopath. We're just saying that may suggest something happened when you were in utero, and perhaps if we can figure out what happened, we can figure out the mechanism to how a person ends up being a psychopath. So, and we did talk about this because we always do this at criminology conferences. People want to know the social implications. You know, what do? We go around and screen people for how long their fingers are and then lock up the ones that have longer ring fingers. Right. Dr. Adrian Rain made the point that, you know, this really what we want to do if we're going to do this research is we have to be extra careful and really scrutinize to an even higher level if we're going to be, you know, basing any policy sort of changes or implications on this work. So that was pretty cool.
Otherwise, you're going to have psychopaths out there chopping off the very tips of
their 4D finger. That'd be the easiest way to do it, right? So, right. Or lengthening, extending their second digit.
Yeah, like Gattaca.
Right. Yeah. Right. Great. Okay, so, and then there was another talk on the 2D-4D as it related to utilitarian judgments. So judgments that are sort of made means to an end? Do I want to say that? Really not taking into consideration.
The greater good.
The greater good, not considering any collateral damage. So I want to get those authors on as well, Simone Tang and Jill Forty. So maybe they'll come on the show too. Great. So I think that's good enough for an ASC wrap-up. Did you guys have any other thoughts you wanted to mention?
No.
Good.
Just great first conference.
It was good to see. You know what? Then I think about it. I mean, with the exception of a few faculty members.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was there from our department,
yeah,
and that's
it was
really
nice to see.
Really nice to see.
Yeah,
even Dr. Monk, who I love.
Yeah, it was good to see her too.
Yeah.
One thing I did notice too is everyone kind of goes their own way, though. You know, I mean,
yeah.
You kind of want to go catch up with your friends and your old
love. You mean it? have your secretary call my secretary.
Exactly. We'll have your people call my people.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we have an Aftermath Radio Q&A question. Lined up? Let's have that.
Be voicemail? Yeah. Hold on 1 second.
Oh, this would be voicemail. Yeah.
You got mail.
No.
Aftermath Radio Q&A. You got mail.
Hi, I'm Jane from Wiltshire, and I have some response, rather question, following that interesting Aftermath Radio episode featuring Dr. O'Toole. And in a way, this is perhaps a question about the book publishing industry as well. You know how at the moment the people who go and look for those interesting books relating to psychopathy are the people who've already been through really serious trouble, like perhaps the people who want to order the book Snakes in Suits, you know, perhaps the people who've already had a child with a psychopath who want to read Dr. Leanne Leadham's books on raising at-risk children and so forth. And I'm thinking about all this because when I was right in the middle of a relationship with a psychopathic man who was my colleague and fellow member of the church, I did go to the bookshop all night, really, and looking for a book or two about relationship problems, and I didn't find anything. Like, I even asked the shop staff, saying, well, yeah, I'm looking for a book about relationship problems, workaholic boyfriend, how do I handle that, you know, it's distressing me. So my thinking is, well, how can these important facts about psychopathy gradually get into more mainstream books about perhaps problems at work, problems in romantic relationships, problems with social situations? Like, back on that day, if there was a general book on problems, relationship issues that said, oh, by the way, there's a one in so many chance that your boyfriend is a psychopath, or, I don't know, someone could be nice and charming, but statistically that person could still be a psychopath. Like, if the information is going to gradually be introduced into more general sources of information, I just think it would help the public. So the question is really, and also especially for the people who are in the book publishing industry, how can this gradually happen? You know, how can the information gradually become laid down in these more general books that are not just about raising an at-risk child who's half from a psychopath? Okay, well, sorry to be a bit long-winded, but this is just what I'm thinking. Okay, bye, from Jane.
Right. And it leaves me like 4 seconds to answer the question. Anyway, I think that's a great question, you know, and Jane's question about books in the mainstream about psychopathy and how do we get more of those. And actually, you know, we've certainly talked about Dr. Paul Babiak's book, When Snakes in Suits, When Psychopaths Go to Work. Paul's actually listening right now and sent me a question, by the way. You want me to read it?
Yeah.
He said, is there any difference in the fingers of female psychopaths?
Oh.
I wrote him back, I don't know. But thanks for listening, Paul. Anyway, Paul actually would be a good person to talk to about the books. Basically, the way publishing works, at least my understanding of it, is you kind of pitch an idea to the publisher. So we really need more folks pitching ideas about these books to the publishers. Sometimes the publisher will contact you if they have an idea, but these publishers tend to be more reactive than proactive. I do agree that we need more books on psychopathy, you know, in more the mainstream. I mean, we're just seeing more and more of these academic sort of textbooks. But ultimately, yeah, it'd be great to see more. And maybe Paul will write another one. His did really well, right?
I'm still wanting to read that book once I get to it. It's on my list.
Just know that he's listening now.
Yes, I will read it.
All right. Anyway, we got to go to a break. Yeah. Okay. Aftermath Radio, we'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
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 Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
the kinder, gentler Aftermath Radio bumper.
Smooth jazz.
Love that. Love that. Aftermath Radio. Dr. Robert Shug, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology. If you'd like, gee, how did I get a hold of us?
You can call us at 562-912-3541, Skype us at aftermath.radio, email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com, and check out our website, please, at aftermathradio.org.
Excellent. And we have on the line Jenny. Jenny, are you there?
Come on, I'm here.
Oh, there's Jenny. Excellent. And Jenny, you are calling from London.
I am indeed.
From across the pond.
Indeed.
Where it's very late or very early indeed. Where you are, depending on how you look at it.
Indeed. Middle of the night, almost.
Now, just logistically speaking, did you, like, sort of go to bed and then set your alarm to wake up, or did you just, like, pull an all-nighter and decide to go straight through?
No, I stayed up just for you.
Wow. So the quality of this interview might be somewhat lower than maybe if you had taken a rest, right? I don't know. Anyway, we're very, very happy to have you. Now, just to give everyone else a little background, Jenny has contacted me by email several weeks ago, right?
Yep.
Actually, I think we might have read one of your emails over the air at some point.
I think you perhaps did a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then we spoke by phone. Now, I have, you know, in front of me the email on what we agreed to talk about, and there's other things that I'm not sure that I'm allowed to say, but I'll just sort of let you guide it, and I'll go by what we originally agreed to, okay?
Fine.
So I guess, and really what we're getting at here is someone who was involved in a relationship with a psychopathic individual.
Yes.
And you want to let us know how that all started then?
Yep, sure. I met him quite a few years ago, about 8-9 years ago, through a dating agency, a private introduction agency, actually, over here. And he was lovely and articulate and charming, and just the kind of gentleman that, you know, I was hoping to meet. He seemed very confident, very easy to talk to. And by and large, you know, a lovely chap to begin with, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically how I met him.
No, go ahead.
So I was going to say, because so I was in my mid-40s, and because of the job I was doing, I wasn't in a position to really meet people, you know, meet guys really any other way, and that's why I joined an introduction agency. It was a particular professional and business people introduction agency to sort of meet the kind of people that I'd like to. I'm not the kind of person that would go out to sort of clubs and bars and things.
Right, and these,
as I say, it wasn't suitable through work.
These services are becoming more and more common in the United States too, where you already know the type of person you're looking for. In your case, you said you were looking for sort of a professional, maybe someone who's a little more well established, and you would expect the service to provide you with lots of candidates, right?
Yep.
And you
yep,
met. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Yeah. And as I say, I sort of met him through this introduction agency, who in fact charged a fair bit of money for the introduction, because they vet everybody that joins and actually visits them in their homes and checks their credentials. And so I felt sort of a lot safer than any other way of meeting somebody.
Right. So you got your life messed up, but at least you paid a lot of money for it. Right?
You could say that.
All right.
Big learning curve. Yeah.
And you mentioned you mentioned your profession. We're going to bring that up today, right?
Sure.
Okay, so let us know what you do for a living then.
Well, I'm actually a qualified psychotherapist, and I've had many years of experience working in both private practice and psychiatry with the NHS, and that's where I was working when I met this guy, and that was the reason, as I say, I needed to try and look for somebody through an introduction agency, because through work, it just it wasn't really a possibility.
Yeah,
in fact, you know, I was trying to look for healthy people.
Right. Turns out, as psychologists, you're not allowed to date your patients in or out of mental wards, right?
Yeah.
Although, in this case, you might have done better with maybe someone in the psych ward.
Definitely. It was a bit like taking work home with me, it turned out.
All right. So, okay. So, how did things change once he had you hooked? Can you talk about that?
Well, can I just sort of say, to begin with, it was just a whirlwind romance. And looking back on it, it was, everything was far too quick. I just got totally carried away with his attention, and I think what I've heard other people called love bombing. The attention, the presence, the holidays, the immediate wanting to see me all the time. And of course I was flattered by all this attention, but as I say, once he got me hooked, the mask slipped fairly rapidly. In fact, once I moved in with him, which was within the year, really, although I was staying over there most weekends pretty quickly, his behavior totally changed. He became very controlling, didn't like me seeing my friends or family, wanted me all to himself. His moods became very unstable. He would rage quite scarily over quite small things, usually if I disagreed with him on anything.
Jenny, could you let me stop you there. Could you describe some of these rages that he had? Do you remember any specifically?
Oh, yes. I remember quite a few.
Tell us about that.
He would absolutely go red in the face, bulging eyes, start screaming and shouting and very threatening, very often the sort of pointy finger or the clenched fist, and sort of stomp up and down, and the body language as well as the verbal language was very, very threatening and frightening. He would also throw things around, and as I say, once I moved in, it was usually anything precious to me, like ornaments or photographs of my children, wow, or anything like that, that was precious to me.
None of his stuff, though, right?
Oh, no. His stuff was incredibly precious. Possessions were very important to him, and had to be treasured and taken care of. But anything that was mine didn't matter. Wow. Didn't matter at all to him. And as I say, it was very scary, but I put up with it and used to sort of just try and calm him down. I was quite used to, because of my work, psychotic patients, schizophrenics and psychotic patients going off on one. And so I think my tolerance level was probably quite high, probably too high to abnormal behavior.
Jenny, I'm sorry to interrupt, what sort of things would set him off? Do you remember?
Almost anything, really. In fact, you know, when I'd reflect on it, I'd think, well, what was all that about? Mm-hmm. I just often didn't know. He couldn't take criticism of any kind. And he had this huge ego, it turned out.
Okay. He was grandiose.
Very grandiose. Mm-hmm. And if I ever sort of said, well, oh, I'm not quite sure about that, or that doesn't add up, or just anything really could just totally set him off, if I didn't obey in sort of all respects, he would just totally go off on one, or if his dinner wasn't quite right, or just silly things. It was totally out of balance to any situation, really.
Right. Now, did the charming man ever come back, or?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I mean, I think this was the thing, and obviously why I stayed. The rages were, and the sort of controlling behavior was always interspersed with the old charmer and the, you know, the very charismatic man. He could be absolutely lovely, and in fact, you know, most people that met him thought, you know, that he was. It was only once I was sort of living with him and under his control, really, that things changed. But certainly the nice side was always there, and I think that was part of the control. I never quite knew where I stood, and always just hoped for the nice bits to return, and was so glad when they did.
Sure.
And thought, well.
Now, Jenny, when you first started seeing these signs, were you thinking, "Wow, I got to get out of this relationship," or what were you thinking?
No, I thought, "Oh, I've got to try and help him. This poor." I mean, right from the start, I'd had the sad story of his past, how his wife had died, he'd been left with three young children, how all his ex-girlfriends were psycho bitches from hell, and all the trouble that, you know, he'd had in relationships, and the real sort of what's called pity play, really.
Right. He was the victim, sounds like.
He was the poor victim, right. And I was there to rescue him. And again, in some ways, I think this is where my own profession probably blinded me to reality, that I got hooked in. I felt I needed to help him, and I could help him.
Right. Okay, well, Jenny, we got to take a break. Can you hang on for the next segment?
Sure.
Okay.
No worries.
Great. Yeah. Aftermath Radio, we'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
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 Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
We are back, Aftermath Radio. If you'd like to speak to us, call us, area code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio. Email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. And Aftermath Radio, we will always gladly put someone on the air if they have a sharp British accent, right?
Yeah.
And speaking of someone with just such an accent, we have Jenny, who's calling in from London, talking about an experience and a relationship she had with an individual, psychopathic individual. Someone she met on a professional dating service designed for working professionals, and Jenny was a psychotherapist at the time. So, you know, generally someone we would think of who might be kind of in touch with these sort of red flags. But again, it sounds like it started very well and turned for the worse eventually. And you were talking about at that point, the point where you were starting to see the things, the control issues and whatnot after he had you hooked. So where does it go from here then? What happened?
Right. Well, I say I stayed in this relationship quite a few years, a good sort of 6, maybe 7 years. And eventually my health gave way. And I can't stress this enough to anyone listening. If you're involved in a relationship with someone like this, it is dangerous for your own health. Luckily, I was sort of pretty mentally strong, although I did suffer from a sort of a mild depression for a while. But eventually, in fact, I had a heart problem due to the sort of prolonged stress and the living in fear most of the time and feeling totally trapped. I had a minor heart attack and was taken to hospital, and I have quite dangerous heart arrhythmias, and I was in hospital for about 6 weeks with this, and this is when I did get an opportunity to have time to myself away from him, which, of course, he hated.
Sure.
But it gave me time to reflect and to start thinking about what life was all about, and really I had to do something to get away. And in fact, you know, his moods and his cruelty continued even while he was visiting me in hospital.
Oh,
I remember at one stage he came in and said, "Do you know how many times I've had to come and visit you? It costs me money every time I have to park in the car park. I've been here 32 times. When the hell are you coming home? If you know you don't come home soon, I'm going to have to find somebody else because I'm getting fed up with this, and you've become a real liability."
Mm.
And that was great to hear when you're lying in a cardiac ward.
Yeah.
And that was the final nail in the coffin, really, for the relationship. And I had to, once I got my strength up after having a cardiac ablation and getting home, that my serious plans to leave started to formulate.
Right, right. Gosh, that's amazing. Okay, so then in terms of, I mean, other folks are listening to this and, excuse me, and are probably, some of them might even be in the same situation you were.
Sure.
Any advice that you would have for them?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Get out as soon as you can. Now, I think the thing to do is please don't ignore the red flags. And if you are like me, and in any of the caring professions, really, not even necessarily psychology, psychotherapy, but nurse, doctor, anything, for goodness sake, don't think that you can help these people. Bad behavior, personality disorders are really not treatable, certainly not from the inside. Always keep a professional distance from anybody with major, major problems like this. But the biggest advice, too, I think, is when you meet somebody, no matter how you meet them, go slow in any relationship. Don't let things, if there's a high attraction there, be even more careful. Because if there's a high chemistry there, you get blinded by what's really going on. So go slow. Get to know them really well before you get too emotionally involved or make any commitment whatsoever. Another thing I would say is observe them with other people. I missed a lot of warning signs of how he actually treated other people, how he spoke about other people, how demeaning he was of others, certainly behind their back. He could be lovely to their face, but behind their back,
right,
would be very devaluing. Also, how they talk about their exes.
Mm-hmm.
He would have nothing but nasty things to say about ex-partners. And, you know, I should really have been thinking, well, I'll be the next one that he'll be slagging off. And really also, like I said before, how they react when you disagree with them. You know, with someone who is healthy and normal, you can have a disagreement that doesn't need to turn into an argument or a major rage.
Right.
So,
Jenny, we've got about, I'd say, 3 minutes left. And
okay.
Can you speak to how to get out of this kind of relationship, or maybe even just what worked for you?
What works for me is, most importantly, get the support of friends and family, in whatever way you can. Make plans, but it has to be behind their back. So plans for money, accommodation, where you're going to go, how you're actually going to live, and get some distance between you, make those plans, and you have to be ready. I think that is the thing, and it does take time. Don't expect to be able to do it overnight, but you've got to be absolutely ready, because they don't let you go easily. There's such a control issue going on there that they don't let you go easily. You have to have everything absolutely planned, and actually get your own self-respect and this whole thing of learning to love yourself again, and realizing that you're worth more than that.
Yeah. Well, Jenny, that's an amazing story. I know it's even hard. It's just difficult to scratch the surface in the time we've had you today, but we really appreciate you coming on, and definitely.
That's my pleasure.
And with your accent, you're always welcome on the show. Seriously, if you'd like to come back and tell us more parts of the story, we'd be more than happy to have you back.
Thanks very much for having me, Robert.
And thanks so much for staying up late, too.
No worries. I'm going to bed now.
Okay, Jenny. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Oh, there you go. What do you think?
Wow. Wait.
I think your mic needs to be on. Yeah.
That was pretty intense.
Yeah. We were discussing during the break how England and is it just the folks from
Florida.
And England and Florida seem to be the hotbeds for psychopathy. But of course, we're just saying, right?
Yeah.
maybe it's just that the folks from England and Florida are the ones that call in.
Well, England is a smaller country, and they do talk. I mean,
yeah,
just a couple that have called. Maybe they told two friends. And
right. I think it's interesting how a psychotherapist can even get roped in. I think that's again, nobody is completely safe. Okay, so just a couple of things in terms of housekeeping. Next week we have next week we got Dr. Jill Rickey coming on, talking about consequences for leaving the psychopath, stalking, lying, and manipulation. Are you prepared? This is part two of the interview that she gave earlier on in October, so that's always good to have Jill on there. And then, actually, we're going to be dark the week of December 5th, because I have a faculty meeting. And December 12th will be the last show of the season. We're going to have Dave Koss and Leanne Liedemann and Paul Babiak on doing the Wheel of Controversy for
the
season wrap-up. There you go, right? So closing out the semester with a bang, definitely. If you'd like to communicate with us over the Thanksgiving holiday, you can certainly leave us a voicemail at 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. You can always, you can get to that voicemail through Skype at aftermath.radio. You can email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. We love reading emails and reading emails over the air. And then again, the podcasts are up at aftermathradio.org, although last week's is not up because I've been slacking.
You've been busy.
I've been busy, right, too. So this one, today's and last week's will get up probably over the Thanksgiving weekend. I'll probably do it on Thanksgiving. I'm sure my wife will appreciate that. Me working. All right. Anyway, so I think that's about all the time we got, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys want to say anything else? Happy to be back, though?
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Yeah,
all of us here at Aftermath Radio, we will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Aftermath Radio, production of the K-Beach radio station at California State University, Long Beach. Produced in association with AftermathSurvivingPsychopathy.org. Your host has been Dr. Robert Shug. Your producers have been Brian Frederick, Chantel Fahmy, and Gurjeet Brar. Join us next Monday at 4 p.m. for another exciting episode. If you or someone you know has been victimized and you'd like to talk to someone, call the Cal State Long Beach Counseling and Psychological Services number at 562-985-4001.